With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello there, I hope you're enjoying another Stellar Ramble Meets. Pete here, you might know who I am. Just a note to say, if you are listening to this on the Thursday, the 26th of September, we are playing Hackney Empire tonight. Tickets available right now from ramblelive.com. Come down, bring your friends, we're going to have a right old giggle.
Welcome to Fantasy Five-A-Side on Football Ramble Daily. I'm Jim Campbell, and today I'm joined by actor, Pod Bible Magazine bigwig, rapper, poet, record company mogul, and all-round legend in the podcast game, Scroobius Pip. Pip, welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you for having me.
It's a delight to have you on. How's it all going?
It's good, it's good. It's lovely to be here. I'm sure you find this a lot, but I think one of the reasons that specifically themed podcasts are often gold is that people are excited to talk about things that aren't just the things they have to talk about.
Absolutely.
In all their promo, in every... How did it start out? How did your music career start? How did acting start? All that kind of thing. So it's always good when it's like, oh, football or MMA or wrestling or anything else. Yeah, I'll talk about all of them things.
I do this for a living, and one of my favourite podcasts I've ever done was about crisps.
Yeah.
Exactly the same way. Just the chance to be sort of nerdy about something and really sort of to get into the weeds of it. So just for those of you listening, if you've not heard the show before, what's going to happen here is I'm going to ask Pip what his Fantasy Five-A-Side team would be. It's players from any era, whoever he wants, and then he gets one extra player as well that's not a footballer, just to have some company, really. Yeah. So, so you're a Millwall supporter, is that right?
I am, yes.
So you're from Essex originally, is that right, as I am?
I'm from Essex, but my family are all from South London.
Right, so that explains
That's where it comes from. I've been going Millwall since, I think we figured out, since I was five or six at the old den, and then at the new den, and... Obviously, it's a weird one with Millwall, because it's what we're mainly known for is the negative stuff.
Yeah.
Yet they've always been a club that have had the family enclosure. And when I used to go as a kid, they'd have pre-match and half-time entertainment in the family enclosure. There'd be literally some ropey old clown or some people doing a Punch and Judy type thing.
Yeah.
In the ground, on the terraces.
So was the reputation that Millwall have something you were aware of externally, or did you notice it in the ground? Was it a sort of surprise to you when you heard how Millwall were sort of viewed?
It's kind of like all things. I heard about it first from the people complaining about the people complaining.
Right.
As with everything, I will always hear about new movements in trans rights from silly transphobic people who are furious about trans rights, rather than from my trans friends who just...
Getting on with their lives.
Yeah, exactly. So I'd hear at Millwall that the press always give us a bad rub of things, this and that. So I'd hear that kind of angle of it. But then you know, it's one of them. I think it's important to not get defensive, which clubs and fans can do a lot.
Yes.
Millwall have had loads of really unfair press over the years, but we've also had racism, and it's an interesting one. I remember when Sky did it was 5 or 6 years ago, I think it was. Sky did an undercover camera thing, and they had footage of one fan being racist at Millwall. And the Millwall fans all came out and said, come on, it's one fan, there's thousands of us, no one else is, blah, blah. My outlook was, that's great. If you could send undercover people every time, then we could get rid of all of the daft, right? I'd rather we get rid of them all and address it. Like, I think it's really overlooked that Millwall were the first club to reach or to complete the full kick it out program. And again, you can equally argue it's maybe because we needed it the most. But it's great that as a club, we have been taking action and have done for years. And you see it more and more on the terraces again. I remember as a kid hearing stuff that I wouldn't have known was unacceptable. Mm. Homophobic stuff, racist stuff. But, you know, every football ground as well in that era.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's good to see it seems to be being pushed away. I always remember another one in the Sun that was, and again, it's one that Millwall fans always use. It's like there will be a genuine small problem and we'll use a big fake problem as an excuse. And it's like, well, no, we need to address it. But there was a Sun journalist who went undercover at Millwall, and he reported that he saw the fans doing Nazi salutes and chanting "See Kyle," which is, I read that, I was like, that's disgusting. I've never seen that at Millwall. That's shocking. It was then researched more, and they retracted it, because what it was we were playing Brighton, and the Brighton fans were chanting "Seagulls."
Oh, wow.
And doing a point, as you do at football, "Seagulls, yeah. Seagulls." And this reporter wrote that as Millwall fans chanting "See Kyle" and doing a Nazi salute.
That's quite different, isn't
it? It's massively different, and that's terrible. That's jumping on the reputation that we...
Yeah.
Again, possibly deserved in our time, but equally, it doesn't then excuse every time there is a problem.
No, absolutely.
Do you know what I mean? And I think that becomes the problem with Millwall fans, or football fans, sorry, not specifically Millwall fans.
Well, it's that tribal nature, isn't it? It's this defensive
nature
of that. Exactly,
you get so quickly defensive and so attacking of other people. I remember when, I can't remember, there was a racist thing recently at another club. And the response from the fans was, you know, I see that kind of thing at Chelsea all the time. No, actually, it was a Millwall one from last season. And someone said, I've seen the same at Chelsea and things like that. And my response was, I don't care. I'm not a Chelsea fan. I'm a Millwall fan.
Well, quite.
I want to address it as a Millwall fan. Mm. It's if Chelsea have got a problem as well, or Fulham or anyone else, I'm not attacking Chelsea there. If anyone else has got a problem, then that's their problem. But if we've got a problem, then we need to address that. And
And that's where it starts, isn't it? Each club has to take responsibility. So with that in mind, obviously you are player manager.
Straight onto a big racism discussion, out of nowhere, sorry.
No, it's absolutely fine. This actually, there's never been a time where this is more important. So at any point that we end up talking about that, that is fine with me.
Yeah.
But you are player manager of your own team here. So what sort of role will you be playing in that team?
Well, I wish that there was an opportunity to rage quit actual football games as I do in Championship Manager. Again, my biggest addiction over the years has been Championship Manager and then Football Manager. I stopped for years and years and years because genuinely I'd lose days a week.
Yeah.
It's not an exaggeration to say that the way I describe it is I would forget I was alive. Which sounds stupid, but I'd get to the end of the day and go, oh, I haven't eaten.
Yeah.
Or I haven't drunk anything.
Remember that feeling.
That's genuinely forgetting that you're alive.
Yeah.
That's forgetting that you're an organism that needs...
That you're not
fuel,
part of the game.
Light. Yeah. And again, I'd find myself in my Football Manager or Champman days, it's the most I ever read the sports sections in newspapers, because I'd be doing real life research for my fictional game that I'm playing.
Yeah.
I'd be looking at, oh, you know, this game, I've just started the season, it's 6 months ago, who's come up in the last 6 months, who's a good youngster that I can snap up, that no one who's been good this season that no one was expecting
in three seasons time, which is probably about 2 days in real world time, then he'll be banging them in for me.
And again, I in those days I had the luck of obviously always choosing Millwall, but Millwall had Cherno Samba, who's one of the iconic Championship manager players.
Did you ever see him play in real life?
No.
That's a shame.
I saw Cherno sprayed in graffiti on a wall outside Millwall. And I know that he left because of some kind of... Yeah, he never really made it into the... He may have played one or two when I was there, but yeah, he never really made it into the first team. But
shame.
Iconic in my Championship manager
it's
team.
A strange way to be iconic.
He's England's all-time top goal scorer.
So on the pitch, you know, where are you going to be slotting in? Obviously, you're going to have your picks around you, but are you a dynamic midfielder? Or are you a tenacious defender?
I'd like to think of myself as a skillful attacker, but I'm not.
Yep.
I think as a Millwall fan, we've always loved the game running midfielder, the hard as nails midfielder. I'd like to think I'm that. I'm probably not. Essentially, I'm tall, so I'd probably be a centre back coming up for corners.
Yeah.
That's about it. I'm tall and not that fast.
Well,
so that,
yeah, then there you go. Don't go anywhere away from that
area. I'm a centre-back, I think.
Yeah, you'll give goals away, as I do every time I play. So who have you gone for your goalkeeper?
So for my goalkeeper, it's an interesting one because obviously the rules are that we can't pick more than two people from the same team. Obviously, my instinct was to pick five ex-Millwall players, but that would be boring for anyone who's not a Millwall fan. But there's a Millwall route that I've come to this player because I've chosen... Tim Howard.
There's a Millwall connection to Tim Howard.
Only through my life. So essentially, my favourite goalkeeper of all time was Casey Keller.
Yeah.
Because he was the Millwall goalie. He was a metal fan. He had long hair and a mullet. He was American.
Which was weird at the time, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And he wore trousers.
Yeah, he wore trousers.
Did a lot of things differently.
In one game when there was a pitch invasion, someone tried to take his shirt and he literally floored them. Which wins over Millwall fans. Even though as a Millwall fan, he probably floored. It wins you like he's hard. So I loved him. And then his place in the national team got taken by Tim Howard.
Yes.
And I was like, wow, who's this guy? And then it turns out he's a metal fan. He's got a big beard. He's everything I love. So yeah. I then initially in that kind of, oh, I hate this guy. He's taken, because again, Millwall don't have a lot of international players.
No.
So a Casey Keller was kind of we've got someone that's away on the international break. This is exciting. So yeah, Tim kind of, he took his place. So I initially hated him. And then as a kid who grew up listening to punk and metal and stuff like that, and knowing that that era of football in particular was so R&B, so cheesy, outfits and all
so,
that.
So like... I suppose the term now would be basic, but very sort of mainstream and just uncreative.
100%. And the thought of Tim Howard being the one in the dressing room that's listening to Slayer or putting on some kind of heavy metal or death metal.
But surely that's better to warm yourself up for a game. You know, you don't want R&B. You want something up-tempo.
I mean, I would imagine his heart rate dropped massively during the games because he's a goalie. So he's going to get all fired up in the dressing room and then... stand around for potentially a lot of time, but yeah.
He was a hell of a keeper at his peak as well. That game in the World Cup in 2014, I think he set a record for the most saves in a World Cup game. It's the game against Belgium.
Yeah.
And it was just unbelievable. He scored a goal as well in his career, which I love. And there's a real measure of Tim Howard that when he scored, it was against Bolton when he was playing for Everton in a camouflage kit, which...
Amazing.
I can understand why they've stopped doing that. But
that must be how he scored. Yeah, like they literally couldn't see him. He snuck up for a corner.
Well, it was from a goal kick.
Yeah, course,
and it was Adam Bogdan for Bolton in the other goal. And I love this so much. Tim Howard didn't celebrate out of respect for Bogdan because of he described it as a cruel thing. I think that is a real measure of him and what a character he must be.
I love that. And I love players who have kind of a brief window of fame. And he is one of them. It's kind of, there was a few seasons where everyone knew who he was. He seemed to come out of nowhere and then kind of be middling. The keeper I had in before I chose Tim was a Fraser Forster. And the only reason for that was the season before he got injured, I happened to be watching a lot of football that wasn't Millwall.
Yeah.
And he put on some of the best goalkeeping displays I've ever seen in my life. I've not particularly followed him since. I looked him up and I didn't know what club he was at. I didn't know he's not doing as good as all this cunning. But for that season, I was like, this is the best goalie I've ever seen. And this is the solution to England's problem, where we'd never really replace Seaman or whoever else.
He is a giant, Fraser Forster, as well. Like, even among goalkeepers, he stands out as a big man. He's got an almost sort of Herman Munster size, style, quality to him. But yeah, there was a time where he looked unbeatable. Unfortunately, I think he just sort of fell off a cliff form-wise a little bit. It happens sometimes.
Yeah. I think he got injured and then came back and wasn't quite there, and then moved around clubs a little bit, but he was going to be my choice, and I was like, this is all based on the one season that I wasn't on tour, so I happened to watch a decent amount of games that weren't Millwall games, and I was like, who is this guy? He's the greatest keeper, because he was it Norwich at that originally?
He was certainly been at Southampton.
No, it was at Southampton. It was the season that Southampton performed above all odds, and then all their players went off to be in the best teams and things like that. It was that season, and everyone was talking about their goal scorers and their skillful players, yet every match I was watching, I was like, it's that guy at the back that's keeping the lights on here.
So what was it about Howard that gets him in over Forster for you?
It was, I don't want to just go off the beard, but it was partly the beard, and yet it was the memory of the fact that one of my favourite things from when I was doing music was playing festivals, because you have to win the crowd over. Mm. They're coming in not caring who you are, and you've got to win them over. And I think you gain some of your biggest fans in that situation, because it's not just that it wasn't an open goal as such.
Yes.
And I think that
was quite literally a huge platform.
Yeah. And I think that was it with Tim Howard, the fact that my initial reaction was like, who's this idiot who's ruined the god of Casey Keller and taken his international, removed any international glory from Millwall? And then he won me over, because he, as you said, he played some amazing games internationally and in the league, and just, he was a metaller. So
he did.
That also pushed him ahead for me.
Bizarrely, he part-owns Dagenham and Redbridge FC.
Oh, wow. That's local.
Strange,
that's great.
Yeah, absolutely. Another one. So moving on to your first outfield player. Who have you got? Who's up?
It's Roberto Carlos.
Oh, I'm excited about this. So I'm going to, obviously, I'm going to peek behind the curtain. I know who your picks are. I've done my research, so I'm going to be peppering these with little facts. He's number 22 in Real Madrid's all-time top scorers list with 71 goals. And it's like,
that's mad, isn't it?
Left back. It's a left back. It's insane.
Yeah. I always remember watching the analysis of an England game, and I can't remember how it was, but they were talking about strengths and weaknesses, and they were talking about Glenn Johnson, who was close because he came and he was at Millwall as a youngster.
Right.
So I've always liked him, but they summed it up perfectly, because they said on the weaknesses, it was defending. Because genuinely, that was his weakness. Like, he was good at it, but it was the rest of his game he was amazing at. And it's kind of similar with Roberto Carlos. It's like, it's his free kicks, it's his runs, it's his, specifically, it's his thighs and his calves.
They are 24 inches, if you're wondering.
I genuinely remember, it was because obviously it was before smartphones and that, I was at school when Roberto Carlos was in the World Cup and all this coming, and people had pictures of his, like, in magazines, things like that. Like, have you looked at, have you seen him?
Seen this freak of nature?
It's one of the first footballers I remember that he was being looked at as a specimen rather than as a human or as a character. Yeah. It's like a racehorse. Where have you seen, look, he's wonderful.
Because especially at that age, footballers, they're the closest thing you're going to get to superheroes, really, in terms of how you view them. And that the almost novelty of Roberto Carlos's thighs was something that made you think, well, this is a guy to watch out for. But interestingly, on the defensive side, when he went to Inter, he very nearly signed for Villa as well before he went to Inter, which is amazing.
Wow.
Like, I'd love to have a little peek into that dimension.
Imagine.
I know. But he, Roy Hodgson wanted to play him on the wing, because obviously when you look at the attributes Roberto Carlos has, it makes all the sense in the world. Yeah. But he refused, and he wanted to stay at left back. And that actually drove his move to Real Madrid, which is fascinating.
Interesting, yeah. Because again, you kind of, there was the Carragher thing a while back, where he said to Gary Neville, was it, that no one wants to be a left back or a right back. No one's dreaming of being Gary Neville, and it's like, it's true. You think it's generally wingers who've not made it, and they've dropped back to become a defender. So the it's beautiful, particularly someone who scores so much as him. You'd think he's been waiting his whole life for a manager to go, this is your chance at the more towards the front of the pack. Yeah. But I love that he's like, I'm a defender.
I like breaking it up as well, because to be fair to him, he was a hell of a defender as well. It's just that he did so many other things. It's sort of that's what you remember. I mean, I think there's a legitimate argument he's the best left back to have ever played the game.
Yeah,
he's almost someone who defines the perfect way of playing that role.
Completely,
because it is more a left side than a left back. Just that whole wing, that whole area is his.
Yeah, and again, that's evident in him being in this team, because again, supporting a team like Millwall, you're always going to have your heroes who are defenders. You're going to have your Keith Stevens, your Mick McCarthy, all these kind of these centre backs, these tough in the middle
brawlers, almost
break someone's legs kind of thing from the old days. Your Butchers and your Kitchen, like all that kind of era of player where they're rough. So the fact that a high goal scoring, skillful left back has taken that place is it says a lot.
Yeah. Are you aware of his nickname? South American players have the greatest nicknames.
I can't think.
I've only learned this recently. He was known as El Hombre Balia, which is the bullet man.
Brilliant.
They're just better from South America, aren't they?
Brilliant. It's perfect. I just remember he's the first person I remember people being really excited and analysing his free kicks.
Yes.
Like, which is weird, because obviously there had been goal scorers, but the way he would put the pace and the swerve he would put on them prior to Beckham, prior to Ronaldo and all these kind of people, I remember it being a real, well, no one can stop that.
Yeah.
That's not possible. It's as good as a penalty.
Yeah. I mean, they clocked in at something like 120 miles an hour or some insane thing like that. And also he had that technique, and I don't know how players do this. You know, when a ball has a logo on it.
Yeah.
And on the slow motion, you can see that, like, the logo's not moving.
Yeah.
So it's like, there's no spin on that. But how do you how do you make something move in that way with just your foot? I find that absolutely fascinating. And there's obviously the very famous goal, the Le Tournoi goal, where he bends it around the wall and Fabian Barthez doesn't even move.
Yeah.
My favourite bit about that goal is if you look at the replay, it goes so far out to the right that a ball boy actually ducks because he thinks it's going to hit him, and then it bends back in and goes in. It's just...
Again, I remember at that point, pre-internet, all this coming, just the excitement of that happening. It's like, again, exactly as you're saying, people are like, I don't know how this is happening. Yeah. How can you kick it that way and then it comes back this way at such an extreme angle and exaggerated?
I wonder if even he knows how he did that, because... he scored a goal that's referred to as the impossible goal as well, and it's not that one. There's one he scored that was pretty much from the corner flag.
Yeah.
I like to think it's deliberate. It certainly looks deliberate.
Yeah.
He doesn't seem to be crossing, but you look at that goal and it's like, how has that gone in? I think it was against Tenerife, if anyone wants to look that up. We want to see it later. It's phenomenal.
I'll have to give that a look. But again, it's a bit of bro science, but there's a quote that people say about bumblebees, how scientifically their size, their body shape and size and mass versus their wings, they shouldn't scientifically be able to fly, but the bumblebee just doesn't know that, so it flies. And it feels like that.
It's like
you shouldn't be able to do that with a ball, but no one's told Roberto Carlos, so he just does it. And again, if someone sat down scientifically and went, here's why it doesn't work, it might have broken it.
Yeah. I imagine the ball itself was in some sort of existential crisis in the net.
Exactly.
What the hell? So became self-aware just to go, what?
I thought I was going into the stands and being replaced. What's going on?
I'm suddenly famous. So moving on from Roberto Carlos, things get a little bit more industrious here, shall we say.
Yeah, well, I thought if I'm going to have, and again, he was a hard tackler still and all that, but I thought if I'm going to have such a flamboyant defender in my kind of centre midfield, I need someone who can kick anyone really hard. And it's a Terry Herlock, Millwall legend, completely from the era that I started going in the mid-80s into the 90s.
Yeah.
And he had I've got pictures of me with him as a kid. I've got them on my phone, probably. I'll find them later. And he had a curly mullet, as people did.
Yeah.
A face that looks like he's been in a lot of clashes. And he was just hard as nails.
He looks like a man who was kicked out of Iron Maiden for fighting too much.
Yeah, yeah, completely.
Maybe it was Scared Eddie, so I didn't want to have him around.
Only man I've ever seen get a standing ovation for a red card. so he... in the kind of 89-90 kind of season, we had Hurlock, we had Mick McCarthy, we had Cascarino, we had Sheringham. A lot of those players started to get picked up, and yeah, Hurlock was
all skillful,
one.
But all hard as well.
Yeah, so Hurlock got picked up, and he had a few seasons at Rangers and did great. And then towards the end of his career, he came back, and his first game back at the Den, he got sent off in 4 minutes.
Yes,
and just standing ovation. It was just like, welcome back, Terry. Welcome back. And again, I know it's perpetuating the Millwall myth of violence and roughness, but it was a beautiful thing because he was of that era where, and it was at that time when football was changing. And if you're in the lower leagues, you're looking at the Premiership or the top division or whatever, and going, "Oh, it's all gone fancy. They're diving and this and that." So to have a flashback from our own fairly recent history, just come back and just go, this is how you do a tackle.
Yeah, it's something to win the fans over, isn't it? But I remember, not really comparable, but I suppose there are parallels. I support Arsenal, and when Matthew Flamini came back for his second spell at the club, his first game was against Spurs, and I forget, it might have been Jermaine Genus, maybe it was a bit later than that, but he just clattered into somebody, like straight away, just as if to go, hey guys, I'm back. And do you think it was a similar thing, that just he misjudged it a bit?
Completely. And again, I think with Millwall, the thing that you need to do to win over the fans is to care. And that's literally it. We've had some amazingly skillful players that the fans just haven't got on board with over the years. I always remember Steve Morrison when he was first at the club. The fans just weren't getting on board. And he was a good player, he was scoring goals. But there was a new season started, and he started to chase down every ball. And he started, if the keeper had it, he'd run. You know, the run that's just to make them kick it. You're never going to get it, but it's just, he started to do that. And that was the season he got over with the fans, because it was like, oh, he cares. And that's all we really want as Millwall fans. We want you to bleed for the badge kind of thing. Really care.
Because it's what
about
you're doing. I suppose any team where you're against the odds in a lot of your games, which I imagine is the case for Millwall, you know, fairly regularly, they are representing you and your hope and your ambition, I suppose, aren't they?
I mean, with the ultimate underdogs in that way, and that's what they love. So again, it is that beautiful thing of, and it also means that anytime we're playing a bigger team and there's a skillful player, you get a hard tackling against that player and you're going to be a god. I remember I was in Cardiff at the Millennium Stadium when Millwall got to the FA Cup final against Man United in 2005, I think it was. It was gutting that Wembley was being rebuilt at that point, so we didn't have the final at Wembley moment. But I always remember that they beat us, I think they beat us 5-0. We had a far, far better time than any of them, of the United fans. But just watching player manager Dennis Wise put his arms round Cristiano Ronaldo, a young Ronaldo, and see him looking over at the ref, almost in tears, like, what am I meant to do?
Yeah.
And not getting anything.
Yeah.
Just had us all in tears of laughter. Oh. He'd then score and we'd still be like, but still. He's proper annoyed, isn't he? He doesn't know what to do about this.
That's hilarious. I found a really strange little nugget from Terry Warlock's past, as he was apparently affectionately known.
Yes.
He had a spell at Brentford, as I'm sure you know, and he featured in a midfield with Chris Kamara and Stan Bowles.
Wow.
What a strange coming together of players at the beginning and the end of their careers. I can't get my head around that even now.
I love that when there's that generational snapshot. It's kind of, here's who's coming, here's who's going, and there's that,
And what a mix of characters as well. Yeah. Just love it.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey.
They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
We are going to go for a little bit of a step up in quality now.
How dare you, but yes.
actually, you know what? I've got a little quote about Terry Hillock that I think we'll just enjoy first. I think this was in a Millwall match day programme or something like that. The question was, what's your favourite animal? And Neil Ruddock's answer was Terry Hillock.
Of course it was. That's perfect.
Yeah. So, sorry, moving on again. Who have you got pulling the strings in the middle?
So, I had to kind of think of... It's at this point. I mean, I think that everyone's genuine favourite player in the world or of all time is a midfielder. I don't think it's attackers. I don't think it's defenders. I think it's always a skillful midfielder. And you've got your Ronaldo... You've got your Beckham, you've got your Ronaldinho, all of these. I think they're the players that really spark it off because they're the ones that have those moments of just magic.
Yeah.
So I had to pick one of them and I went for Zinedine Zidane.
Zizou.
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, he really was a breathtaking player, wasn't he, Zidane?
Truly.
I feel like we did a profile on him a long time ago that people really, really loved a lot. And one of the things I remember thinking around the time of sort of researching the ins and outs of Zidane's career was that, you know, every player has its talismanic, or every generation has its talismanic player where they're the best in the world. And we're spoiled now because we have possibly the two greatest players of all time. But, you know, before Zidane was ours, you know, he was our generation's top guy. And and what a joy of a player he was. He had that glide, you know, just I think the real top players, they look like they're almost floating just above the pitch. And also, you know, with his hair and the fact that, you know, the double Z, you know, I think sort of theatre matters in terms of footballers being characters, especially at the really elite level. And because Zidane, he arrived kind of late in the game, in a sense. Not that he arrived late in the game, but his profile getting to the level it was. By the time most of us were aware of him, because as you say, there wasn't so much media at the time, he was the finished article already. And it was just like, oh my God, this guy is something else. And he's just so iconic before you even look at the incredible, incredible skill he had on the pitch.
And the thing that was partly exciting, again, maybe it's the kind of underdog thing that I love, is it seemed against the odds. He didn't have the look of a Ronaldo or a Messi. He had that kind of Matthew Letizia thing of that. You'd look at him and go, he's not going to be the skillful, amazing, far out goal player. And then
how's that
is.
Guy got out of the stands and onto the pitch?
Yeah,
look at his hair.
And I always remember hearing a quote about Zidane, because again, it's what got him in this spot basically, and made him beat away all the other. I was looking at your Zolas and Janino, even just all these players who had those moments in the UK that were amazing. Yeah. But being a Millwall fan, again, the fact that it's not that we've ever been flair alone doesn't impress. And I remember reading I think it was in the Zidane film maybe, but they were saying how they compared his approach to parkour. And the point of parkour is that it's not to be flashy, it's to look at the most efficient way to get from point A to point B, removing all boundaries. If you could do anything, you wouldn't walk around this corner and go over there. You'd just go over this, under that, through that. And that was Zidane's outlook, it seemed. He didn't do flashy stuff for flashy sake. He's in the corner. If he goes left, the defender could get him. If he goes right, the defender could get him. The logical way is to chip it over his own head.
Yeah.
Drop his shoulder one way, go the other way. Like all this mad stuff. It all. And then when you know that, you watch any of his highlights, it's like, it's all functional.
Yeah.
There's no extra flair there. It's all really functional. It's like, if there's flair, it's to distract you and to make you go, I'm going over here, I'm not, I'm going over there. And that just put him on another level for me. It didn't seem like some arrogant, blessed by God player who's showing off. It felt like he's going, no, I need to get past all these people. Here's how I'm going to do it.
And he was known as being a real team player, wasn't he? Yeah. Which is actually, you know, a kind of rare thing for somebody so gifted and who is known for skill more than anything else.
Yeah. And then if you like, if the other fear was, how would all these players play together? And then, you know, he ended his career by headbutting someone. Yeah. He's going to get on with everyone in this harder team. We've got a hard defender, we've got a hard goalie, we've got a hard midfielder.
Have you got a worry that maybe Zidane and Herlock are going to clash in training or pre-game?
I think they'd hit it off over a pint. I really genuinely think they'd have a wonderful time of just... Again, it's that thing of, if they're on your side, like...
Yeah.
Millwall, I'm certain Millwall hated Dennis Wise until he was our Dennis Wise.
Yeah.
And then we loved him dearly. And there's so many players are like that. Joey Barton comes to mind as one of those players over the years that everyone at any club other than his hates him. As soon as he's at your club, you're like, oh, he's good, isn't he?
Mm.
He fires them up and he's skillful and he's clever and this and that. I think it'd be that. I think Herlock would be like, no, he's ours.
I think they'd probably be, after a little while, they'd be like sort of just, you know, like a lot of players have handshakes now, like sort of bespoke handshakes. They'd just be headbutting each other as a greeting and it's sort of, it would be really the unstoppable force and the immovable object just colliding in midair.
That'd be their goal celebration. They'd just run from the goal line and the midfield line, just charge each other like rhinos.
Refs like, do I send them off? They both seem fine. Maybe they're acting. One of my favourite things about the Zidane headbutt, if you can call it favourite, was the way that a lot of people reacted after the game, and you could tell that they weren't people that were sort of nerdy about football in the same way. They were like, oh, what a sad end. What a sad end to his career. It's so out of character. It's like, it was his 14th red card. It's not even the first time he'd been sent off for nutting someone. It's just it wasn't out of character at all.
Yeah, and again, it's an iconic ending, isn't it? Again, it's not the one anyone would have chosen. Right, I remember at the time thinking, "Oh, this." But it's he was a mercurial character, and that's how you want a character like that.
Yeah.
To go out.
I think that famous shot of him walking away from down the tunnel with the World Cup in the foreground is one of the best football pictures ever.
Iconic,
absolutely incredible. And then to go on and do what he did as a manager with Madrid is just unprecedented. And it's absolutely amazing. So you got yourself and Terry Herlock, and to a degree, Roberto Carlos shoring it up.
Yep.
You got Zidane presumably pulling the strings. I imagine you're not playing him at right back.
No.
Who have you got to top it all off up front?
Well, obviously there's a lot of iconic attackers over the years. Cantona is someone that kept coming to mind. Everyone, if you're a fan of Zidane, you're going to be a fan of Cantona. They've both got that skill and that madness, the good and the evil in them. Obviously, being a Millwall fan, Teddy Sheringham is one of he's a legendary England striker, and he came from Millwall. Millwall.
And he was all-time top scorer for a while.
He was. Him and Cascarino was my early years of they were the players that made us think that we could be the best. They were there when I've got in the drawer at my dad's house, there's a photo of teletext when Millwall were top of League One, which was the top league at that point.
That's amazing.
We were top for 1 week, I think, and we took a photo of teletext. That's how old it was. But that was that era. But I think on just to kind of annoy, if you ever have any other Millwall fans on, there was only a one player I could pick, and he's the guy who took the throne of all-time top goal scorer at Millwall, and he's most Millwall fans' favourite manager as well. It's Neil Harris.
Yeah.
He's just, again, he's Millwall through and through. And
He's an interesting character, Neil Harris, isn't he? Because, and I hope you won't headbutt me for this, but it seems that aside from Millwall, his career was actually very unremarkable. He seemed to be a journeyman everywhere but Millwall, where it really seemed to work for him, and it really sort of clicked into gear.
That's going to be why he means so much, right? That thing of he's ours.
With you and Terry in the team, you're probably going to get that out of him as well.
Yeah, completely. And he's the first person I ever got starstruck with. When I was working in HMV Lakeside. Yeah. So at that point, I'd met a load of bands and stuff like that. I'd go to a lot of gigs. I was lucky enough to meet bands. I never got nervous. I was working on the till and someone handed me a CD and I looked up and it was Neil Harris, and I stumbled so much. I never let him know I knew who he was. Yeah. No one else in all of Lakeside knew who he was, but I was just absolutely lost for words. But he's given me a moment that is one of my most eye-opening moments in my life. And for anyone, again, we were talking about the perception of hooliganism and stuff like that in football in general. And people will often say that that it's a bad atmosphere on the terraces and things like that. But when Neil Harris was at Millwall, I don't think he'd become our top goal scorer yet. But he'd scored a load. I think at this point, it was before he'd left, he got a testicular cancer.
Mm.
And it was a massive deal, obviously. And Millwall said, look, we're going to support him. We're going to keep him on his contract. We're going to support the trust he set up and all this kind of thing. And he was out for a while and he battled that and he got over it. And then he came back from that. And I remember the game that he came back. I think it was the game he came back. It was one of the games he'd returned, and he hadn't scored yet. And there was a point where we had the ball in the box, and in my memory, at least three players had a tap in, and they passed it and passed it and passed it until he was in position, and then he scored. And they picked him up on his shoulders and ran him over to the fans, and the absolute emotion. I'm genuinely welling up now. I've looked away a few times to try and compose myself. The genuine emotion of all these big, rough South London guys in tears and so proud because their guy, I said, Neil Harris, who was probably a journeyman anywhere else, but our guy had got something so horrible, he'd beaten it, and then here he is, he's scoring. Yeah. At the Den again for Millwall, and
it's a beautiful
hair standing
thing,
up,
isn't
all
it?
That kind of thing.
But, and also the physical toll that must take on your body to come back at all is a really incredible thing, and what a moment. And there's a wonderfully, wonderfully Millwall thing about Neil Harris as well. Do you know the origins of his nickname? It was known as Bomber, wasn't it? Do you know the origin
of
that?
No, I don't think I do.
Apparently, it was a reference to Sir Arthur Travers Harris, commonly known as Bomber Harris by the press, and he was Air Officer Commanding in Chief, RAF Bomber Command during the Second World War, which is so niche, like so unbelievably niche. Is. How on earth is that?
Yeah.
Has that taken on?
I love it. It's perfect, though, right?
Isn't it?
And again, it suited him because he was that guy. I remember him and Cahill, when they were in the team together, they would just run riot because people wouldn't be expecting people of their height and their stature to be getting headers, to be getting outside of the box goals, in like every kind of goal. They were both a threat from anywhere. Yeah. It was perfect.
That's always beautiful, isn't it? So, right, we got your first team, but as we know, you also get a sub. So you've got some company with someone who basically isn't a footballer.
Yeah.
So who have you gone for your final choice?
Well, I wanted to go for an Essex boy, and there was recently in one of the Essex newspapers, they did the top 30 sexiest men in Essex and from Essex.
Where did you and I feature?
I got number 22. But number 20 was someone I've had on the podcast and I've known him a while. Is a wrestler called Will Ospreay. I was furious he beat me, but again, it was hilarious. Like Ron Weasley was number two, so it's really.
I'm still not even in there.
No one's
outrageous.
Got anything to be proud of. but it's Will Ospreay. He's a wrestler. when I had him on my podcast, I recorded it in Raynham in his mum's back garden. There's a costume room at the back that, because they do like costumes and stuff.
Yeah.
And I was interviewing him the weekend before that. He was wrestling in the Tokyo Dome in Japan in front of, I think that's a 40 or 60,000 capacity venue. The Monday after that, he was mastic in a bathroom because he still worked for his dad's bathroom company.
Wow.
Or his uncle's, I think it was. And it was just like, it's just the most Essex and most beautiful show. And he's grown to be arguably the biggest wrestler outside of the WWE, or one of. But the reason he fitted in the team is, if you look him up on YouTube, on Twitter, anywhere, you will see he does things that I don't know how humans can do. And that kind of, it gave me that, as it was when I picked Zidane that I came up with Ospreay, because it was that thing of he'll just figure a way to make a ball do something that Roberto Carlos can't do.
Zidane will be stepping back and going, oh my God. So
what did he just do?
Yeah. So I'm delighted to learn that he's from Raynham, because that's my hometown.
Yeah, yeah.
Although that pushes me further down the pecking order of most successful people from there. I looked up some of his stuff online, and obviously, you know, seeing a high-flying wrestler is you know, we've all seen many of them, and it's very, very impressive. But I completely agree with you. Some of the stuff, I've just never seen anything like it. There are two or three more spins in there, or a change of direction in a confusing way that is almost balletic. And
there's a few things I've seen him do when I'm at a wrestling event. I've seen him do live, and I'm literally, I don't know how that happened. And the first one was the first time I saw him. He ran at someone, and then he just ran up their chest and did a flip, which was just mind-blowing. You see it in kung fu movies, but it's mad to see. But the one that I still don't really understand, there's a thing called a handspring. So you run towards the ropes of the ring, you put your hands on the floor, you kind of do a handstand and bounce off them, and then you might do a flip back. You basically go back onto your feet. He does that without putting his hands on the ground.
Wow.
So it's a hand-free handspring. So nothing touches
just
the ground. He just throws himself in the air and bounces off upside down and lands somehow back on his feet. And there's stuff like that. And there was one, as we record this, there's one that went was all over Twitter last week, because he did this drop kick outside of the ring. And he's on the outside of the ring. There's a table, and then he's put his opponent in a seat in the crowd. And he does this drop kick where he just jumps over the table and gets the guy in the crowd. And it's the wrestling equivalent of Cantona at Palace doing his flying kick.
Maybe it's like a reference.
I genuinely thought, I sent it to a few mates, and the first person who saw it said, that's the Cantona kick.
Yeah.
I was like, well, there you go. You should call it the Cantona kick from now on. But
he does have a move called the Cheeky Nando's kick.
He does the Cheeky Nando's kick.
Which I could not love more.
Yeah.
I have to say, though, I once fell down an escalator and I landed on my feet. So
amazing.
So, you know, he and I probably got a lot in common. Similar skill sets.
It's probably the Raynham thing, yeah.
Yeah, it's something in the water. I mean, he is an incredibly talented athlete, this guy. But are you concerned that the rules of football would nullify a lot of his skill set? He can't be like putting his hands on people to sort of jump around them, or do you think he's got the athleticism to just basically do what he wants?
That's it. I think it's the athleticism element. The fact that so many of his moves involve like jumping off of things that aren't there, or jumping over things. I can imagine him being like when they do a bad football film where there's someone, a martial arts person who's playing football and running around and doing flips over every player. I can imagine him doing that in real life and just going, wow, how did that happen?
If maybe rather than sort of boards, the pitch had ropes, then we'd really see the best of probably all of them. There we go. That's your picture, your Fantasy Five-a-side team. Obviously, a really important thing is chemistry off the pitch as well. How do you feel that this ragtag Motley crew would get on in the post-match celebrations? I'm going to go ahead and assume that you win.
Yeah. I think Herlock is enough of a Millwall legend that Neil Harris would love him.
Yeah.
Anyone who's played for Millwall or knows Millwall loves Neil Harris because of his stories. So I think they'd get on great.
I feel like Herlock and Howard as well would probably... Yeah,
I think they'd work
sort
well.
There's a metalness to them
again,
both.
Again, there's a toughness. Oh, that's it. I think all of them have got a toughness. Even the top goal-scoring attacker, who beat testicular cancer. He's got that toughness there. And Zidane as the skill guy, and Roberto Carlos has said, he could strike a ball, but he could put in a tackle as well, or he could just stand there and they'd run into this brick wall of a man. So I think everyone would have that that element. And I've checked, and I'm the tallest, so I guess I may not have the toughness, but I've got height. So I'll make sure I'm standing up a lot in the pub, just to give that prowess, to make them feel I'm on their level.
So effectively, Pip, you've very deliberately picked a team of thugs there.
Yeah.
So do you think this sort of stuff helps with Millwall's reputation?
Exactly. It probably isn't that helpful. But I genuinely think that all play together well. And I think, I've selected this team purely because of the after-match pint. It's just, I've chosen people I want to hang around with.
Yeah. The balance is good on the pitch as well, it has to be said.
Yeah. I think, I genuinely think that all work well together and all get each other. I think, as said, anyone other than Zidane, who's as skillful as Zidane, Herlock would be looking down his nose at as a fancy
Zidane.
Fancy Zidane. Exactly. So yeah, I think that works.
Cool. Well, that's all we've got time for. Before we go, is there anything you'd like to plug? Anything you want to point to people in the direction
Not
of?
Not particularly. Obviously, my podcast is out every Wednesday. It's called Distraction Pieces. I've had people from sports, comedy, film, all sorts of stuff. But I also am one of the three editors of the Pod Bible. And the Pod Bible is a magazine that it recommends podcasts and interviews podcasters. And we also do a Pod Bible podcast, which is out every Monday, and it's a 20-minute, it's interviews podcasters about their podcast and the podcasts that they love. The way we describe it is it's the podcast that talks to podcasters about podcasts and podcasting. I got that a bit wrong, but yeah, it's 20 minutes, and the idea is that it's a bite-sized kind of meal supplement rather than a replacement of any of your diet. And yeah, it fits in that gap at the end of your journey where you finished a podcast, you're like, I don't really want to start another one, but I've got a bit of time left. So yeah, the Pod Bible magazine and podcast are both available online and in all good places.
Brilliant. Well, that just leaves me to say, Scroobius Pip, thank you very much for coming on to Fantasy Five Aside. And you horrible lot, I'll speak to you later. Cheers.
Bye.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we'll weigh around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.